If you are a small business owner, I'm sure sometimes you feel like you need a marketing degree just to successfully market your business. I'm here to tell you that is not the case if you use Constant Contact. Constant Contact's award-winning platform has powerful marketing tools to make it easy to grow your audience, engage your customers, and sell more. In just a few clicks, you can launch a campaign that is tailored to your business and goals. Maybe you're launching a new product, or releasing a newsletter, or want to tell your customers about upcoming deals. Constant Contact can help with all of that. This includes email, SMS, social media, and so much more, all designed to be easy so you can sell more, raise more, and fast-track business growth. Plus, Constant Contact's award-winning customer service is there for guidance along the way to help you with things like customer lists, templates, and follow-ups. Get going and start growing your business today with a free trial at ConstantContact.com. Constant Contact, helping the small stand tall.
Rippy Writes with Brian Scott Rippy.
Transcript can be obtained by drinking a fifth of bourbon, ramming your head through some drywall, and then writing down every thought you have.
What's up? I am Brian Scott Rippy. Thanks for tuning in to another edition of the Rippy Writes podcast. It is our Sunday SEC baseball conversation with Colin Brister, where we finally kind of put the nail in the coffin as another predictable week of Ole Miss baseball has come and gone, with the Rebels losing 2 out of 3 to Alabama. So welcome to the Groundhog Day podcast. We talked about a lot of big picture stuff about what this means for the future of the program, Mike Bianco's contract situation, and probably all the relevant stuff that you wanted to hear that has nothing to do with how Ole Miss squandered another series this weekend. So anyway, buckle up. Before we get to that, though, I want to take one quick break to remind you. This podcast is brought to you by C Spire. It's time to upgrade your home internet to the best service in the market with C Spire Home Fiber. The past few years have proven how important it is to have a reliable home internet connection for you and your family. That's why C Spire Home provides the most reliable internet service with 99.99% uptime. C Spire also prides themselves in having the best customer service in the home internet market. Their customer service is award-winning, local service based out of the Southeast with industry-low call wait time. C Spire provides 1 gigabit and 300 megabit internet packages to homes across Mississippi, Birmingham, and the Southern Alabama regions. C Spire is also proud to announce the release of their brand new 2 gigabit and 8 gigabit home internet plans. Save yourself the hassle by not waiting for your internet connection to drop with the other guys. Call or go online to cspire.com/home today to use the promo code RIPPEE, R-I-P-P-E-E, at checkout for 1 month of free service. That's right, just for listening to this podcast, you get 1 month of free service when signing up for C Spire. Check them out. C Spire, customer inspired. Podcast is brought to you by Skybox Sports Picks. Who is Skybox Sports Picks? Well, glad you asked. They're the world's best gambling handicapping website, the inventors of the Skybox Matrix Interval, an advanced modeling mechanism that has helped propel Skybox to the top of the sports handicapping industry. Hope you capitalize on a terrific March Madness from Skybox. They rake it in as always. College basketball is their bread and butter. They've got NASCAR running through the summer. It'll be football season before you know it. Sign up for a picks package today at skyboxsportspicks.com. Go online, find a picks package that fits your price range. You can try it for a day, a week, a month. I'd recommend going on with the all-access pass for a year. It'll pay for itself and then some. Don't lose money. Go with the professionals. Skyboxsportspick.com. Math cuts through everything. Check them out today. Use the promo code RIPPEE, R-I-P-P-E-E. That'll get you 20% off any purchase. Check them out, skyboxsportspicks.com. Okay, here's Colin. All right, we now welcome on Rippy Wright's baseball correspondent, Colin Brister. After a one-week hiatus, we didn't throw in the towel after last week, and even though we might have gotten on here and said we were going to, it was just more of a scheduling conflict. But more of the same. It's Ole Miss has lost 2 series, 2 out of 3 since the last time we talked. I really am running out of things to say at this point. It's just the same. I say it's the same thing every time. They do something terrible differently that surprises me every game, but it's overall the same result. They don't have enough anywhere across the diamond, and it's going to take a team to really help them out to win a game, and that's happened to the last 3 weeks. But I'm running out of things to say. It's groundhog.
I would like to point this out. You know how like people say that, you know, one run games kind of average out over time. Like you're going to win probably 50% of those. You know what I mean? Well, here's the thing. Ole Miss is 4-0 in the SEC in one-run games. So, like, they're getting kind of lucky and are still kind of bad. So, that's a problem. They're getting lucky and still stink. I guess, is this where we do the thing where we make fun of ourselves for the 2022 team being 7-14 and coming back, and this team is 7-14. But I actually had a glimmer of hope in the 2022 team. I don't have any in this team. This team still has to play Texas A&M. Good luck.
Did you see, by the way, A&M got down 9-0 in the first inning.
Didn't matter.
Against Georgia, and they run ruled them. Got down 9-0, and the game lasted 7 innings, and they won.
Yeah, it didn't matter. And Ole Miss is going to try and get them out in 2 weeks. Mm-hmm.
But, yes, I did have that in my notes to ask you. With Ole Miss sitting at 7-14, they have them right where they want them, I guess?
Yeah, yeah. They're just, I mean, see, here's what sucks, right? If they had won one more game, like I think if they were 8-13, I could present a scenario. It's like, hey, just win 2 of 3 at Auburn and LSU. Not the most impossible things in the world, right? Like, quite frankly, I think they win 2 next weekend. I don't know where in the world they're going to go about winning a series from Texas A&M. Maybe I'm wrong, but they just need to pray for a game, which means if you just win a game, you got to sweep somewhere. This team has a hard enough time winning series. I don't see a sweep happening. So, yeah, I mean.
Yeah, of course not. We've played out this exercise for the last probably 2 to 3 weeks. I guess it got a little bit of jolt of life from Mississippi State fumbling the series with Oxford, but it was more so just, okay, sure, I don't know, crazier things have happened. You know, Georgia's not great. Alabama's good, but you get them at home, like maybe. But like now this is getting to the point now. They're not going to beat anybody good.
No.
You get Auburn and LSU, but they're both on the road, and I don't think either of those teams are good. LSU's talented. I haven't really watched a ton of Auburn. I know Auburn got a little bit unlucky earlier in the year in some games, but like this team can't go on the road and beat anybody good. They're really, I mean, if you really think about it, they're a Saturday night game against Mississippi State away, for Mississippi State really fumbled that game and allowed Ole Miss to continue to stay in it from not having won a series since the opening weekend against South Carolina. They're much closer to that world than they are into an improved record.
Oh, absolutely.
That's the part. I guess that's probably what gets down to the crux of it. There's none of these games that they've lost that you point to one or two plays and say, damn, that's unfortunate. If that had just swung the other way, they'd have won that game and won that series. They're getting destroyed every weekend. Like it's a comedy of errors, and that probably
that's the
more loud than anything else.
That's the thing with the 2022 team when, yeah, they were 7-14, but you were like, oh my God, if they would just get a hit with a guy in scoring position, they'd win a game.
Like the Arkansas series that put them at 7-14.
Yeah, like this team, they could get multiple hits with runners in scoring position. Instead of, you know, playing 7 innings, they would play 9 and lose by 8.
Exactly. Exactly.
You know, the game. Again, like, and I'm being a little bit trying to be a little funny, but I'm kind of serious. They're lucky to be 7-14.
It does feel that way, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, This team is lucky they're not. I mean, you go 1-3 in those one run games, and we're talking about what, 4-17? Dear God.
Yes, that is exactly what that would be. Wait, no. You'd be 5.
If they went 1-3, they're 4-0. So if they went 1-3, so just give them 3 more losses, they would go, yeah, they'd be 4-17.
Yeah, that's not good.
No. And obviously you get credit for winning the games, but I'm just pointing out, like, at some point those one-run games are going to go against you because that's just how it works.
Yeah, it is. And that's where it leads into the larger conversation. I talked to Chase about it some last week, and it's really – we're probably going to start beating a dead horse to some degree if people want to continue to get baseball content, because I don't know what else to talk about. But you talk about the time Mike Bianco has or doesn't have to fix this. You know, we've already talked ad nauseum about how surprising it is that 2 years removed from a national title, he's in this situation in the first place, like this quickly. But what's becoming increasingly clear each week is that the frustration, apathy, hot seat heating up, all of that being accelerated is not even the fact, as Chase eloquently put in his column, that Ole Miss has been 7-14 or worse in each of the last 3 seasons. It's what's happening on the scoreboard and how lopsided it is. They're not competing in these games. Thursday, I was there with my dad and a couple of his friends, and one, the crowd was bad, even for a Thursday game. I know double-decker weekend, however people want to encapsulate that. It was just a bad crowd for a Thursday night game, SEC game in general. And it was the most depressing, lethargic thing to watch Ole Miss get blown off the field 12-0 in seven innings, and in that one inning where it all went to hell, I forget if it was the fourth or the fifth, just start dropping routine fly balls in center field. Fisher drops another one in foul territory. I mean, it was almost one of those things where you're watching, the crowd's bleak, everyone feels pretty defeated, and you're wondering if they're actually ever going to get off the field. And that has not happened under Mike Bianco that I can remember in a very long time, at least until the last 2 years. But that, to me, is what's driving this conversation and making it more real. It's not just the fact that they've had two down years in a row, a down half of a regular season, or however you want to encapsulate the 2022 season, that's really just kind of an enigma. But it's the fact that they're not competing in any of these games that's accelerating this conversation.
I don't know how anyone wants to put it, but yes. And here's my question. And I don't know what Ole Miss is going to do after this year, assuming Ole Miss doesn't make a regional. But let's just pretend that they don't. Let's just pretend that this finishes at 11-19, 12-18, whatever. They have 9 games left in SEC play, 10 if you count the Governor's Cup, whatever you want to do with that. Does anything from this point matter unless they win enough games to make a regional? Like, you know what I mean? Like, does anything going forward affect Keith Carter's decision-making unless they win enough to make a regional? Or is it, hey, if they're right on the bubble, we'll do this? What, like, I'm just curious what you think, where his mindset is. I know that's asking a lot of you.
If you're asking, like, if it just continues like this, this is what it is at this point. I think it becomes, again, the money thing is something that very few people know, like what is available, what is not available, what his buyout actually is. I mean, Chase has dug into it pretty good and articulated this pretty well. But I think everyone has a pretty decent idea of how that contract he signed after the national title is structured.
Sure.
And what the buyout is, but it's pure speculation. If you really, when it comes down to it, we're playing a bit of a guessing game based off previous precedent, previous history. But generally, people think that might be around $4 to $4.5 million for a buyout, somewhere in that neighborhood. And so, for Keith Carter, I don't think there's anything on the field that you're looking for in these final weeks that's going to change your opinion, as you mentioned, barring some insane run. I guess it's just debating the finance side of it and the confidence you have in a guy that has had a ton of good years here, navigating a completely different recruiting environment and riding this ship. I think that's really the only two factors here. I really don't think anything on the field has anything to do with it.
And if it's a money decision, don't you think that decision's already been, like, you either have it or you don't. You're not going to go, I don't think you're going to go out over the next month and try and raise funds.
There's always that weird thing where the kind of Matt Lucas situation where you have
I guess
maybe one or a couple people just after a hype
break
get a little bit more
Andrew
fed
Fisher's,
up. Yeah, that type of thing. But you can't forecast whether that's coming or not.
But I don't think Andrew Fisher's gonna go dog pee on the warning track either. Hey, the program's not gonna embarrass itself. That's when Matt Lou got fired. They're not going to, but I get what you're saying is if one or two people get pissed off enough to pony up the money.
But to your point, why are you going to get more pissed off for the next nine games in 3 weeks than you are now?
Yeah, I guess that's my point. Like, I mean, is the you know, inevitable series, well, I shouldn't say inevitable, is the likely series loss to Texas A&M going to just really, really fire people up for a change? So I guess what I'm getting at is I feel like the decision's already been made. I don't know what that decision is. Barring a massive turnaround where they make the tournament, and obviously he'll be back at that point, whether there is a decision to retain or go in a different direction, I feel like has already been made one way or the other.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's one of those things where whatever it ends up being, it's already probably leaning pretty heavily in whatever that direction is. If they can't do it and he gets another year, then hell, obviously nothing matters from here going forward. It's not like he can go get a whole hell of a lot worse. Or if the decision is that it is going to happen, then, you know, they probably, or Keith Carter and whoever else involved, probably feels pretty good about it financially, and that's probably going to be the decision. I don't think there's a lot of
Let me ask this.
Yeah.
Do you think, and I know this shouldn't matter, but I'm curious, they gave Lamonis the third year, and it looks like he's turned it around. And Lamonis has not done nearly as much as Mike from a resume standpoint. Do you think there's anything to seeing, okay, like, but you can have two bad years and turn this around, or or do you think that that doesn't play into it at all? I think I lean toward it probably doesn't matter at all, but I'm curious what you think on that.
I probably lean toward it not mattering at all, but I mean, it's something I've thought about when weighing it. But with this Mississippi State team, I mean, they sweep Auburn last week to get 10-8, and that's like the textbook college baseball example of like what sweeps can mask. I go back to like that 2016 team that like swept.
Well, they won two this weekend. This weekend's the big one.
Yes. And so that's what I was kind of getting to. I can't figure them out because even last week at 10-8, I was like, well, I saw that team a week ago and I don't think state fans love that team at all. And then nothing screamed to me that program's on the up and up. It's just when you juxtapose it to how the previous 2 years were, yes, they're a whole hell of a lot better off, but I didn't think that was a great baseball team or a really good one. But then, as you just pointed out, they go win two in Nashville this weekend. So hell, I don't know. So that they may be a smart decision that they kept him around. I'm just not sure it factors into this Ole Miss one a ton because I think there's just so much that Ole Miss has to consider when that within its own realm and its own program, you know, the renovation and you know, are you really going to do this renovation, which optically I don't think has a very positive approval rating right now or a very high approval rating.
No.
And are you really going to do it keeping this type of product on the field? Or sometimes you see this in college and professional sports, just in general. If you have this renovation and you're trying to keep people coming to the games, do you get new blood just to have something new instead of just the same thing? I don't know the answer to any of that, but I guess in a long-winded way to answer your question, I don't think it has anything to do with it just because there's so much other stuff to consider that's more important.
Sure. I've said this before. I somewhat think I refuse to believe that money will be an issue. When we're talking about Ole Miss and buyouts, I think if they want to figure it out, they'll figure it out. And I don't know what Keith Carter wants to do. I have no insight here. I'm just talking. But I don't think the decision to retain him or not retain him will come down to monetary. I don't think it'll be a monetary decision. I'll put it that way.
It's just tough for me because it's different than football and basketball. Because I don't really know how that works. And from a fundraising standpoint and this money from the athletic department, like it's earmarked to certain things.
Sure.
And you either have it or you don't. And so I don't know. I don't know. All of that's so vague, it's impossible. But at the end of the day, I do, without knowing the details of anything, I do kind of find it difficult that he's only back next year because of money. That's that. If that's really the overarching reason, that would be, I guess, surprising to me, not totally shocking, but it would be fairly surprising, I guess, if that ends up being the case. And then the other part of it, how are you fixing this? Let's just say here. What is happening to fix this? Because clearly there's a development issue that has really, really hurt this program the last couple of years, because even though they've, whatever you want to make of their portal hauls the last couple of years, I wouldn't say either one of them has been terrible, but there's been no foundation of guys you've developed through high school or junior college or whatever to build around. And I don't think you can really get a core in the portal. I think it's becoming increasingly more clear that it's hard to really just buy it. Yes, you can change your roster pretty quickly, but I think it's hard to just buy a solid core in the portal. So what would give anyone confidence that this is going to get fixed when Ole Miss has been really, really bad in the regular season every year that this new set of rules and circumstances around recruiting has been in place?
Nothing. And I think that's what would concern me the most. There is a absolute development issue when we talk about pitching. And as much as look, they used to really, really rake the cover off the baseball, and they don't really do that anymore. I mean, you're talking about offenses from 18 to 22 that, man, they could swing it. They had the bad year in 17, but from 18 to 22, they could really, 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 really hit. And the last 2 years, they just haven't. So, I think that's what's concerning, right, is the developmental issue. And you know, you look at this roster, and I guess in a way, outside of Groff, correct me if I'm wrong, and you never know with the transfer portal, you'll have a ton of guys back. I mean, Fisher's back. Randall's back. Hill's back. Furness is back. Whatever they're going to do at catcher is back. For the most part, what you're going to have on the mound is back. Groff is obviously gone. I think he's out of eligibility. Of course, I don't really know how eligibility works anymore. Uttermark is back. Yeah, Uttermark is back. Leger's gone. I forgot about Leger. So you're losing Groff and Leger, and Leger certainly had a monster year, and Groff has been solid. But, like, you have dudes back. But I guess my question is, what makes me believe that those guys are going to be better next year? Because the track record over the last 2 years have not suggested that guys get a whole heck of a lot better with years in the program.
Yeah, it's a good question. It's impossible. To me, it's very difficult to make that case, particularly when you look at guys to where, you know, portal haul aside, when we talked about, you know, what if this team is good, like who's going to make a jump and who's going to have to go from, you know, that freshman to sophomore year improvement that we see to help kind of solidify this lineup. And we pointed at guys like Furness and Uttermark, and it's really just not happened for either one of them. Although I will say Furness has really kind of come around over the last.
Sure. Yeah.
I say the last 3-4 weeks, but I mean, you're looking now, he does have 50 at bats in SEC play with an 1,060 OPS. So, you know, over the last, I would say 12-ish games, it's gotten a lot better. So maybe you can count that one. But like Uttermark, it's tough for him to make contact a lot of the time. And a couple outside of that, I don't even know who else I would appoint to, because the rest of them are newcomers. And there was no one I saw that kind of positive sign from last year where it's like, okay, they could count on this kid to be a core piece in the middle of the lineup. That part of it too is increasingly concerning. So what is the case for the core next year, that Fisher and Furness take another leap and that it takes Uttermark 2 years to kind of find it? What case are you making that they're greatly improved with the people they have returning absent of what they do in the portal?
Yeah, there's not one.
And that's just the lineup. Let's go to the other side of it, man. What are you going to do pitching wise?
I mean, yeah, you're going to get Rivas back, but like, here's the thing. Josh Mallett is coming back and he's still not the same dude. Did he pitch this weekend?
Yes, he did.
I think he pitched on Friday. Yeah. You know, and so that Tommy John takes time, and you're really going to count on Xavier Rivas 12 months out. And then, you know, who knows with Austin Simmons, what's happened with him. Yeah, I don't know, man. I don't – if there's not – I'm trying to be really nice how I say this. I don't know how you can look up next year and think that they're going to be good on the mound. I really don't. Because the only way they're good on the mound next year is if you just go sign a hellacious portal class, which they could. But they haven't the last 2 years, because I just don't see – I mean, there's some good pieces in this rotation, but from a depth standpoint, I just don't see how they have the depth of a rotation to be good on the mound in SEC play last year. When you consider the last few years, the development side of things has just not been very good.
Yep, I'm with you. I don't. And so how do you fix that? You go get a bunch of arms out of the portal. Well, what do you need to go do that? You need support in the form of funding. And I don't know how the NIL money for baseball is earmarked. These are, again, very, very vague subjects in the sense that we just don't, because we don't see the financials and we don't know. But I don't know. Do you think Ole Miss's NIL fund was looking brighter right after they won a national title, or heading into this offseason? I guess I'll put it to you that way. Probably.
Probably 2 years ago. Yeah.
So it becomes almost a kind of double-edged sword, but it becomes a compounded problem there as well, because donor fatigue is a real thing. I still don't think this whole thing NIL-wise is a sustainable conversation for a different day, but man, when you run back-to-back whatever seasons they're going to have in SEC play, depending on how this one finishes up, I don't know what the selling point is for continuing to earmark and give baseball-specific NIL money. So that's going to make it even harder to go get, you know, guys to fix this out of the portal, which then you lean back to, okay, well, who have we developed and who do we have in the program? Covered's pretty bare there, particularly on the pitching side of it. And so I don't know, maybe that's a factor. That is definitely going to be a factor in the decision, but it's going to be interesting to see how Keith Carter weighs all of that and ultimately comes to whatever he decides, because again, we're talking about this year and beating a dead horse and all of that. I know there's a lot of dominoes to fall, and from, you know, roster to portal and honestly coaching staff. But like, if you were sitting there today and were like, hey, what's the case that are good next year? I mean, we just ran through it. You can't really make one, can you?
Can't. Not currently. So I can't make one. And you know, I try to be one of, you know, I try to be positive, but I don't know how what we've seen the last 2 years makes you think that this team is going to be competing to host regionals. And here's the thing, man. Like, next year, yeah, I guess maybe if you do, you know, add some pieces and whatever, maybe you can get to the 14 and 15 win mark and maybe a 3 seed in the Corvallis regional. But that's not what this program is meant for. That stadium was built to host regionals. The stadium was built to host super regionals, which, may I remind you, has not, after this year, unless there's some miracle, will not have hosted a super regional game in 15 years. That's unacceptable. But, I don't know, man. I'm somewhat lost for words. You know, obviously you hope that they turn it around and, you know, maybe they sweep Auburn. If you sweep Auburn, we're having a totally different conversation next weekend. But I don't think I foresee that at all. It's been a rough 2 years for sure. If you're just talking about an on the field product,
it's been a long 2 years.
Yeah.
Because particularly with the way it's gone the last two, where you're just sitting here by mid-April thinking like, okay, what does this mean long-term, and like, where is this actually going to go? Here's a counterpoint for you. If they do sweep Auburn, you mentioned having a different conversation. Are we? Because they play A&M the next weekend.
No, I mean, yes, because we've said all along it's 13, and the conversation is you just got to win one, and, you know, you don't lose series in Baton Rouge, to my knowledge, so that would be an easy 13 if you just get one in College Station. I don't remember Ole Miss ever losing series in Baton Rouge. I don't think they do that.
We'll get back to Colin in just 1 second, but before we do, I want to take one quick break to remind you. The podcast is also brought to you by LB's University Avenue there in Oxford. Go see Greg for a Rippy Rights subscriber. You get a new free newsletter from me and discounted meats right now. 3 6-ounce bacon-wrapped fillets for $20. That's about a $40 valuation you're getting there for $20. Then go find your own favorites. It's the best butcher shop in the world. All kinds of delicious cuts of meat, sausages, seafood, all kinds of awesome cuts of meat. My personal favorite is the tri-tips. Love the bacon-wrapped fillet as well. Go find your own favorites at a Crown Jewel of Oxford, a staple of Mississippi. Check them out, LB's University Avenue there in Oxford. This podcast is now brought to you by MC Speech Therapy. Has your child been diagnosed with autism spectrum disorder or another developmental disorder? MC Speech Therapy offers private speech therapy from the comfort of your own home. Other centers may leave you, as the parent, sitting in the waiting room. MC Speech Therapy enables parents to make every moment with their child therapeutic. Using a relationship-based framework, MC Speech Therapy can help your child engage, relate, and communicate. Mary-Claire Boudreaux's doctorate-level expertise and passion in helping children with communication difficulties offers articulation and language therapy, parent training, is licensed to do virtual therapy across the state of Mississippi. With MC Speech Therapy, you and your family will gain a better understanding of your child while cultivating stronger relationships. For service today, call 903-824-8575 or email her at maryclaire@mcspeechtherapy.net. That is maryclaire@mcspeechtherapy.net. Okay, back to Colin.
Yeah.
they haven't done it since, like, what, 2017?
Mm-hmm.
That was forever.
So I don't know what. Yeah, I don't know what happened in 2017 and before that, but I just know that they don't lose them anymore.
But yeah, I don't know. It's just I don't know. I feel like we're going in circles to some degree. It's kind of remarkable how this happened. But I will say, kind of going back to the to what I was talking about earlier, it was pretty bleak inside Swayze Field, and Keith Carter was there. So I wonder how loudly that rings. That talking about Thursday night. I mean, it was a tough crowd, and obviously they didn't really have anything to.
Cool moment for TJ McCants, though.
That was very cool.
I don't know if I've ever seen that before, like for a transfer coming back and people being happy and applauding him.
Well, that has got to be almost totally unprecedented. That's we're getting into this new era where we're going to get like guys going to their previous schools if it worked out okay. And, you know, it's probably not very TJ's situation is not very common in terms of, like the reason for transferring and all of that after winning a national championship and all that. But like you'll probably see a couple more of those over the next couple of years where the college kid gets a standing ovation at his old program, which like I'm not poking fun at all. I thought it was very, very cool. And it was an awesome moment. It's just, that's jarring to see in college athletics because the mathematics of eligibility and all that have changed so much the last couple years or previously that wasn't really possible to happen. So that was something new and jarring, but also very, very cool to see.
Yeah, no, it was, look, TJ had he had a tough final 2 years, but he's also dealing with a lot off the field too. And man, he had two of the biggest home runs in Ole Miss history. So, And is having a super year at Alabama. I'm not, you know, I can't keep up with Ole Miss. So I didn't really know how. I'm trying to figure out what his stat line was this weekend, but I can't really recall because I kind of quit watching on Thursday and on Saturday at times. But I think he had a decent weekend, and yeah, he's turned into a good player, which I probably rightly or wrongly has to annoy Ole Miss fans after the 2 years. And some of that again is dealing with a lot off the field, but he goes to Alabama this year and he's having the year that he's having, right?
Yeah. And Peyton Chatagnier having some success at TCU. I saw someone on the internet trying to make this case the other day, and they threw in the fact that apparently Banks Tolly, who is still eligible, is having one hell of a year at App State. So good for him. But
good for Banks.
He threw that into a point, whoever it was throwing it into a point about lack of development and guys going elsewhere and the whole Kermit Davis syndrome where they were going elsewhere and having productive careers. But anyway, it was pretty bleak there on Thursday night. And I'm not sure I've really ever seen Swayze Field like that. I'm not sure, you know, up until the last 2 years, I've ever really seen Ole Miss on a Thursday night series opener against a ranked opponent, not make it all nine innings and not score a run. That type of stuff is pretty jarring. And I'm just curious how that weighs on the minds of people, you know, like Keith Carter, and really fans as well. Like you mentioned you stopped watching. I have a really, really difficult time watching this team. I was talking about that with someone the other day. Look, they've had plenty. I mean, I used to be, you know, paid to watch it full time and had to, but like, I didn't really hate watching that 2017 team. Even some of those teams.
No, they were young.
Yeah. Even some of those teams in the early 2010s where Mike was kind of on the hot seat the first time, like they weren't good, but it wasn't like, man, this is actively tough to watch each week. This team is very, very tough and frustrating to watch. I have a really hard time committing myself to sitting down for 3 hours and nine innings, or in a lot of cases, thankfully for me, seven innings and just watching them. And I mean, I know it's because they're not good, but like their brand of baseball is particularly offensive on the eyes, if that makes any sense at all. And I haven't felt that way about other bad Ole Miss teams.
No, I mean, that's a really good point about the 2017 team. There were kids, man, and you knew, hey, they're going to be here, right? They're going to be here two more years, and you hope you make a run. And you just kind of have to give them time to develop. But, I mean, first off, you got this team that's full of, you know, well, I say full of, has got guys that haven't been here. You don't know who's going to be here next year. That's kind of the thing that the transfer portal kind of ruins, right? Is like, it's year to year. You don't know if these cats are going to be here to make that run next year. Cause think about in 2017, right? How many people would be talking about Cooper Johnson transferring, versus, you know, he couldn't because he would have had to sit a year. So it just wouldn't have made a whole heck of a lot of sense. But with this group, anybody that's, even if you transfer or not, can hop in the portal. So you don't know if these guys are going to stay and develop or not. So that's one reason that it makes it a little bit harder to watch. And then two, it's, if you can't pitch, man, it's just, I will stand by this. It's frustrating if you can't hit, but watching a team that can't hit is more appealing than watching one that can't pitch, because if you just can't get outs, good luck.
And that's what we've seen the last 2 years. And yes, injuries have been a part of that. How would you explain the Ole Miss pitching coach pitching situation and what you would like to see changed?
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. In hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year.
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations. Forgotten. The history.
Vegas Golden Knights!
History.
Win.
We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
I don't know. I can say what I'd like to be changed, but the reality is if Mike Bianco's here, he's going to be the pitching coach, and there's not much you can do to – I mean, you can't – if you're going to let him be the coach, he gets to make that decision. And for 21, 22 years, it's been a good decision. But the last 2 years have not been. I don't know. I you know, you get three assistants now, but I'm Mike really loyal to his assistants, and for the most part, over the last 24 years, they've done a good job. You're talking about Clement, who's been here for 10 years now, which is kind of crazy to think about. And then Laff's been here since he was born, I think. So those guys have done a good job. I don't know. I do know there's got to be a better job done from a pitching development standpoint, and I don't know the answers to that. But I do know that. They've got to do a better job for sure.
Yep, they certainly do. And man, it is it's going to be interesting over the next couple months to kind of see what the direction of this program ultimately ends up going and being. I was just going through the roster earlier as an exercise because frankly I was bored and tired of looking at their statistics. What is Grayson Sonnier's featured Ole Miss, if any?
I don't know. I mean it.
J.P. Quinn.
I know that sounds, I know that sounds like, you know, kind of backing out of the question. I'll be just real candid with you. I don't know anyone's future in that Ole Miss dugout's future. I don't know. And that includes every single person. I don't know. Outside of maybe Josh Porter, he's probably safe. But other than that, I you could tell me that any of them are there or not. And I'm not saying that I have any insight on anybody leaving or not having a job or not. I don't know anything like that. I'm just saying there is nobody in there that I am like, yep, they'll be back next year. Not one human being.
Other than maybe Smithwick.
I mean, I guess but I don't know. Like, I don't know anything about Campbell Smithwick. I mean, you could tell me he's going to transfer to Rice, and I'd be like, oh, okay.
Fair enough.
But I don't know. I mean, that's the thing with the transfer portal. There's nothing stopping anybody from jumping in that thing.
And then just the last couple notes before we kind of look around the SEC and get out of here. The Austin Simmons thing was a really depressing chapter of what was a really terrible night on Thursday night.
Yeah.
It's interesting to me. It's the classic, throws a couple pitches, holds the elbow, comes back in the dugout, not really moving the elbow at all. He's getting an MRI at some point. Maybe that's already happened as we record this on a Sunday afternoon. I don't know the answers to any of those. But when it's a two-sport guy like that who pitched heavily the weekend prior against Georgia, and then you know everyone, obviously the inevitable, well, how much do you do in spring football? Does that have any effect? I don't know the answers to any of those things. But I do know what pays the bills. And I'm just curious, like, I don't know if we've ever seen this before where that kid looked like he could be a real contributor for the baseball program on a staff devoid of top-end pitching. But, like, what does that look like now? Like, do you think he's thrown his last pitch in an Ole Miss uniform? I'm very, very curious to see how that turns out because I do think he had some really tremendous upside. And on a bad team, they were kind of counting on him out of the bullpen over the last couple of weeks. But how does that work with football and all of that now? I guess the simplistic way to put it, what do you think Lane's opinion on the fact that his potential backup quarterback for next year might not be able to throw a football?
Probably not real happy. I don't think it's any secret that I don't have a problem blaming Mike Bianco for stuff. I got a hard time blaming him for that one, I think, a little.
Oh, yeah, sure. Being unhappy and it being directed at anyone in particular are two different things as well.
Sure. Yeah, I don't think I put that one on Mike. Look, he's in a uniform. He can help him. I'd pitch him too. And it's just kind of unfortunate. And I don't know. I don't know what the future holds. I mean, I know that they're really you would know more than me on this, but I think they're pretty high on him over there at football.
Yeah, I think they are.
So I don't know. I think the kid came with the intention of playing multiple sports at Ole Miss, and but I know that UCL reconstruction surgery, if that's the case, and God, I hope it's not. In baseball, if you're going to go. So the way I was explained is Brock Purdy tore his UCL in January and was able to come back and play football at a high level this year. Obviously, took his team to the Super Bowl. Is that correct? Yeah. I believe. Maybe I'm wrong on that. But
yes, he did.
Yeah, I'm sorry. You know, but it's different in baseball. If you're going to go that route, that's going to take much longer. And if you're Austin Simmons, with the likelihood being that, you know, I don't see any way that he's the starting quarterback this year. Do you have the surgery that allows you to be back for baseball? Or do you go the Brock Purdy route where I don't, you know, it's a quicker fix and it allows you to be back for football? I think that's going to be, if it is UCL stuff, What's the surgery like? And again, we have no confirmation that it is. But I, you know, if it is, I think that would be the interesting thing is what type of surgery do they do?
Yeah, I think that's going to be fascinating too. And I don't know how much we'll end up learning about that. And again, we got to figure out what the injury actually is, but it's kind of one of those, if it walks like a duck, quacks like a duck type of thing. You've seen those type of injuries before, but like, what is the surgery? And then, honestly, I was asking an impossible question to answer, but really, with the day and age now, with the portal and NIL and really just the power these players have, if the possibility to have a year at Ole Miss, or that's next year or 2 years from now, where he has the ability to play two sports, it's probably going to be up to the kid. If he wants to continue doing both, then they're probably going to let him, and if not, and if he doesn't want to, then he won't. But I think, I don't know, what do you think? The days of, like, the football staff just be like, no, you can't do this. Where he'd be like, okay, well, I'm going to go transfer. You know what I mean? I think that those days are probably over. Because I know that happened a couple of players way back when.
Yeah, I'm not sure. It's I don't know. It's the two sport thing is becoming, I feel like, even harder and harder.
Yes,
it's just somewhat. I think here's what I do think. I think it's almost over for baseball players that hit. I think you could probably pitch and do both, it's just becoming to a point where it's almost impossible on guys to do.
Yeah, I do too. I think pitching is really the only doable way going forward. So just another unfortunate chapter of a pretty rough weekend for Ole Miss. They've had a lot of bad ones recently. Just some of the stats that Chase was throwing out in one of the things he wrote over the weekend, they, I believe, are nah, let me see if I have to make sure I want to get this stat correctly. Their record in home SEC series the last 2 years is, I'll just say, it's not great. I wish I could find this from earlier. Hold on. Great podcasting here. You want to guess it? What do you think their record is in SEC series?
Oh, just total SEC series?
Okay, sorry. This was the stat that was great. What do you think their record is in the last 10 home series? So not like how many series did they win and lose, like a 30-game record right. in the last 10 home series.
30-game record. So their last 10 home series. How many have they played this year? I'm just trying to do some. They've played four, and they've gone 2-1, 0-3 against Kentucky. So that's 2-4. There'd be 3-6. They've gone 4-8 this year. Last year, I'm going to guess they won 6 total games. I'm going to go 3-12. So that'd be 6-12 because they actually won their last 3 2 years ago against Missouri. So 6-12, 4-8. I'm going to go 10-20.
9-21.
Damn it.
That was really good, though, doing that on the fly. I would have just thrown out just a guess, but you almost got it exactly by actually doing the math. I've just kind of memory holed the last two seasons at some point, but man, it was just jarring to see. So, anyway,
yeah, not, 10 not and 20. Great,
but I'm sure that renovation will help the home field advantage. So, anyway, looking around the SEC before we get out of here. State takes a 2 from Vanderbilt. That's a big time series. And with them, I believe at 12-9, they have now vaulted from, is this team actually any different to kind of somewhat in the hosting conversation?
Yeah, they're in the hosting conversation at this point. I mean, especially considering the fact that you've got, you know, Missouri at the end of the year, you give them 10 or 2 wins there at least. I mean, that's 14-10. And then you got Arkansas and Alabama. I mean, you win 3 of those 6 games, and you're 17-13. You're hosting a regional and start from Mississippi on the first weekend of NCAA tournament. So, yeah, Chris DeMone has done a good job so far this year. If they, you know, avoiding a collapse or barring a collapse, they'll have finished with a good year.
Yeah, and that dramatically changes the conversation on them. Kentucky finally loses the series. South Carolina takes 2 or 3 from them. Almost had a sweep in an absolute wild game on Saturday. I think both those teams are probably just pretty good. I think Kentucky's really good. They play a really, really interesting brand of baseball that I'm not necessarily sure I appreciated until seeing them in person. But they're going to be very, very fascinating in a regional and how that translates.
Yeah, no, I think it's a perfect way to put it. It's going to be – come June, I mean, somebody's going to have to go in the Lexington at this point and beat them. And we'll see if they are, but it's going to be interesting to see how that translates into postseason play for sure.
Here's a hypothetical for you, and maybe people would just be okay with this in general because it would have meant Ole Miss is competitive. But if Ole Miss was in Georgia's spot and they're competing for an at-large bid to the NCAA tournament, and they lost a series on the road at A&M. In large part because they got up 9-0 in a game, they got run ruled. How do you think people would feel? That would probably not be great.
Did they win a game?
They did. They salvaged the. They salvaged either. I can't remember if they played 2 yesterday or 1 today, but they did salvage a game.
I would be frustrated, but I've watched that A&M team winning a game on the road, College Station. You take it. I'd be frustrated that you were up 9-0 and didn't win though, for sure.
Yeah, that would be very frustrating. Auburn takes a game against LSU, kind of battle of the bottom of the SEC.
Okay, yeah, but that's a big loss for LSU. I get it. You won 2. I get all that. But, man, you needed to get to 8-13, not 7-14, because, man, you need all the wins you can get if you're LSU. Losing that game on Sunday hurts.
Yes, it does. And that's a big difference with 9 games left.
Yeah.
And, hey, that had some ramifications for Ole Miss getting into Hoover. We haven't had that conversation because it doesn't really matter. But I guess missing Hoover for another year would not be great either. What else did I miss over there? Florida and Arkansas. I actually didn't catch much of this series. Do you know who won this? I know Arkansas won the opener. And then Arkansas wins. Wow. Well, did they win 3 one-run games?
I'm not sure. I'll be honest with you. I have no idea.
Looking this up live, I'm going to have to go back and get IT on that one because for whatever reason, this is not loading right now. Mizzou, I guess still kind of trying, but Tennessee takes 3 from them. And that really kind of does it for the SEC this weekend. Anything else before we get out of here? Did you see this home run issue we had? I can't remember off the top of my head which game this was, but the guy overran the dude on first base. So a 3-run home run turned into a single and a 1-run single. Did you see this?
I did not see this.
Okay, I'm going to have to send this to you once we get done. I believe it was in the early portion of that South Carolina-Kentucky game today. But the kid hits one over the left center wall, and I think it was originally going to be a 3-run home run because they had a guy on third. He overruns the guy on first base because I'm not sure he knew he went over the wall. So it's an out, but he gets credit for the guy on third scoring, and it gets a single out of it. I'm not sure I've ever seen that one before.
Okay. Something similar to the, this is how I know I have no life. Something similar happened to that in the 2018 SEC tournament game with Ole Miss and Texas A&M. It happened with Cole Zabowski and Will Golson. I cannot remember if that's exactly what happened, but it was something similar to that happened. I do remember that happening before, and because I remember that the ruling is a single when it does happen.
Okay. I'm going to have to go back and look that one up. Now that you mentioned that, something does sound similar there, but I couldn't begin to articulately portray.
This is how I know I have no life.
But anyway, that'll do it for our show today. We will. He is Colin Brister. We will talk to you again. I don't know, man, at some point, it would, depending on what happens next week, and we'll play this by ear, but I'll talk to you again soon.
All right, my man. Sounds good.
That's going to do it for our show today. Thanks for listening to this podcast. As always, got some football and some other stuff for you later this week, so be on the lookout for that. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you again here real soon.
Everyone is talking about magnesium. It's all you hear about. But why? What do we know about magnesium? Well, magnesium is the number one mineral that 75% of Americans are deficient in. If you are a woman over 35, magnesium will help you rediscover balance, energy, and vitality. Magnesium supports more than 300 enzymatic reactions in your body, including those involved in hormonal balance. From functional medicine doctors to mental well-being and female hormone experts, we all know that magnesium is the one mineral to improve all aspects of well-being and health. But which one? Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers, the trusted choice recommended by leading experts, with 7 best-absorbed forms of magnesium to ensure your body receives the support it needs for overall well-being. Go to bioptimizers.com/balance today and use code BALANCE10 for 10% off. Support your journey to wellness at bioptimizers.com/balance. Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers, your foundation to optimal health and vitality.